Welcome into the Wizards group chat. I'm your host, Ryan Oliver, alongside my man, Chase Carroll. Chase, it's been a minute, man. How you been?
I'm great, man. I am super excited to talk Wizards. It's been way too long. Just hearing from both of us. So I'm glad that we're talking some Wizards today, although it's been a little slow on the Wizards news front. We got some things to talk about that I'm really excited to get into.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll get into a few things here. We'll talk a little bit about Coach Unseld and his future. We'll touch on Wizards' potential moves, if there's any left to make in the offseason. And we'll talk about a few other things also, you know, talk about John Wall and his future in the NBA. I know Wizards fans always kind of have that soft spot for John, so we'll touch on him as well. But let's start with some news concerning our center position. It looks like our rookie second-round pick, Tristan Vukcevic, is going to stay overseas this upcoming season. I know both of us were really looking forward to seeing him play in a Wizards uniform, hopefully this season, but it doesn't seem that's going to be the case. There's been reporting, pretty concrete reporting at this point, that all signs are pointing to him staying overseas. What's your reaction to that? I'm sure it's disappointment.
Yeah, it is. And for this front office, I've given them tons of credit for just about every other move they've made this offseason, to be honest. Like, I haven't had a move where I was upset that they made. I was happy with the draft pick of Bilal Coulibaly. I was relatively happy with all the trades that were made as far as getting off Kristaps Porzingis and getting some young talent in the building, getting a decent haul overall for Bradley Beal. I would say that this is the first move, and it's somewhat minor, but I'm a little disappointed in this for sure. I feel like you're looking at the roster here. What exactly is the goal for the season? I would say it would be to play young talent and see what sticks long term. Develop your young guys. I feel like that should be the goal of this team this year. And however, this move kind of says otherwise in a way, where the backup center currently on the roster is Mike Muscala. There's not really a third option that I can see currently on the roster. There should be a third two-way spot still available, I believe, and it's not being filled yet with a young center either. So it's like there's no young center on the roster. Why can't we find a little bit of time for this guy? And if not, why not at least throw him in the G League, where I feel like the talent is somewhat to the caliber of the EuroLeague, a little different, but I feel like you can get him time in your own system over here. So it's like, why decide now that we're not going to bring him over after I feel like he had a relatively strong summer league? He didn't show everything that maybe you wanted to see in an NBA player yet, but as I just mentioned, we should be looking to develop the talent. So work on what he doesn't have yet. And I'm sure he's going to get plenty of time overseas. I'm not worried about that. Although a EuroLeague team that sees that he's going likely to the NBA next year may not look to develop a guy like this as much as maybe they once did. So I would have just liked to see him in our system, in our G League, if he's not going to play with the Wizards, which I still believe he should with just Mike Muscala in the building. But I'd say this is the first kind of move I was not super thrilled with so far this offseason.
Agreed. I'm disappointed by it. I feel like I was halfway expecting it after you didn't hear any concrete info about him staying pretty quickly after the summer league. I kind of felt like things were leaning that way. I wonder if he needed to have a very strong showing in the summer league to incentivize them to buy him out of whatever contract he has overseas. I know he had some type of buyout clause that needed to be paid by, I assume, the team that drafted him. And I know that was part of his pre-draft hopes, that was that whatever team took him was willing to kind of bring him over pretty quickly here. And it's disappointing. I think that he showed enough where you would at least want to bring him over, as you mentioned, and have him play for the go-go if he wasn't going to get a lot of minutes on the big squad, which I didn't really expect him to. I felt like, you know, Gafford's already kind of a pretty young center still. And I think Gafford more of is what he is at this point, but I didn't think that they were looking to give Vuk a ton of minutes if he did come over, but I felt like him playing for the go-go was really what I wanted him to kind of just be in the system just for some of the games, maybe get some minutes on the actual Wizards team, but really just learn a lot. I mean, we saw Johnny Davis learn a lot playing with the go-go last year. I know he was a higher pick, but I felt like you could see that how that playing in that system really helped him along. And I felt like I wanted the same thing for Vuk, but I'm assuming that Winger and Dawkins and the crew have a plan for him and his development. And maybe there's some level of not wanting to start kind of that rookie clock on his contract this year. Maybe there's just some reason in their mind that that's beneficial. I'm not sure exactly what that would be, other than maybe they're like, hey, you could develop overseas one more year. We'll have your rights when you fulfilled that contract, you can come over, and then we'll have four more years of you on this rookie scale deal. And so maybe it's a way for it. It can be a win-win on both sides. Like, he gets that development and gets to actually play a lot overseas, and then the Wizards can start that clock later. It's not exactly what I wanted, but I think there is some logic in it that I'm sure Winger and Dawkins and the crew have mapped out, and there is some type of plan. I feel like if this was Tommy Shepard, I'd have no patience for whatever plan that they have. But because I'm giving Winger and Dawkins the benefit of the doubt, let's say that there's a plan here and there's a plan in place. And even though it's not exactly what I wanted, that there's a broader plan that's at play here. I do wonder what they're going to do with the backup center spot. Gafford is very injury prone, is not what I meant, very foul prone. And he can't, I mean, when have we ever seen him consistently play 30 minutes? I feel like he kind of hovers around like 25 minutes or less. So it does make you wonder, if you only have him and Muscala, that's just not going to cut it. So I still would expect some other center to be signed, or them to finagle their way into a potential trade that may happen down the line, which is whether that's like Dame being traded or Harden being traded, or, you know, sometimes these things happen around media day or right before training camp, and there might be somebody brought in. But if not, I really do wonder what they're going to do. But they definitely need some other center to come in there and eat up, you know, to eat up 15 or 20 minutes, or they're going to be stuck with Anthony Gills and Xavier Cooks getting center minutes every game. And I just can't imagine a world where that's a viable scenario.
Yeah, totally agree with you there. I just feel like this, what makes me nervous about them keeping him overseas is you never know what can happen overseas with a second round pick. We've seen, I believe, like three of our last four second round picks that were drafting stashes never even have made it over to the NBA, over to play for the Wizards. We have our most recent second round pick, Yannick Nzoza. We haven't even heard anything from him post having drafted him. And while I do believe there's a much better chance of Vuk making it over here, and I think that's definitely the plan moving forward, is to have him on the roster, I believe, next season. It's just always in the back of, I feel like, Wizards fans' heads after recent events, that he very well could never even make it over here, and we never even see what he can do. With Yannick Nzoza last season, Aaron White previously, we ended up somehow getting Bertans for him, so that ended up somehow still being a win. But Isuf Sanan, really the only draft and stash that ever even made it back was Thomas Satoransky, and I mean, he was a great, great backup guard, but I mean, was it worth stashing him for what, like 5 years? So at that point, it just makes you nervous to see a guy stashed overseas and not brought over, when you look at the roster and it just feels like it makes sense to just have him over here now. Like you said, maybe it's something to do with the contract, wanting that extra year. They think he can play more overseas, which I'm sure is true, but I'd rather just have him on the G League roster. Like, maybe it's a certain type of development over in Europe they want to see, that they feel like he can't get in the G League for whatever reason. But I don't know. I wish he was over.
Yeah, no, I think it's kind of as simple as that. It's just you just want to see him playing, you know, whether it's with the Wizards or the Go, just in the organization and in that type of environment. I mean, there's just a lot of things I feel like are just different once you actually play in the NBA type setting versus the EuroLeague and things like that. And not saying that those leagues aren't very talented, because they obviously are. So it's not to talk down on those leagues, but I think there's just ways that the game is played that you have to learn by playing in the NBA type game, whether it's the G League or obviously in just a regular NBA game. So I think there's a lot of things that he could learn and could benefit from that. And I know we've been talking about that quite a bit here on this pod, but it is disappointing. So I think that's pretty straightforward. I'm definitely not making an excuse for it by any means. I'm just assuming there is some plan and there's a strong reasoning behind not bringing him over, but that doesn't mean we have to like it, right? As fans of the team, we want to see him play. He definitely showed he had a lot of talent. So I'd like to see that talent be displayed for us to consume and to watch him grow. But we're going to, I guess, have to just follow some of his games overseas and kind of wait a year, which is a bit disappointing. But let's talk about the roster in general. There haven't really been any moves since the last time we spoke. Is there any move that you feel like you'd like to see? I know backup center is a spot that we've talked about quite a bit since the inception of this podcast that they need to fill. They obviously haven't filled it. The offseason is, I guess, headed towards its conclusion. We're still got a month or so, it seems like, till training camp. But is there any move that you would like to see? Anything that you think we should expect to see?
Yeah, I definitely think there's a clear hole at third center. We've kind of harped on it early into this podcast and in past podcasts that we feel like there's a big hole there at the third center spot. I think in particular, I would love to see a young center in that position rather than an old veteran. Although I have advocated for maybe a guy like Bismack Biyombo. But I'd hate to see Vuk being left overseas just to have someone like Biyombo there in that third center spot. So preferably a young center. I believe they do have a third two-way spot available. Tell me if I'm wrong. I feel like they have a third two-way spot still available. I'd like to see that used on a young big. They've got a grinder, older, small forward that they've used one of the slots on, and now they have a young guard. So I'd like to see the third spot held by a young power forward or center. And I'd like to see Landry Shamet somehow dealt. I'm sure this Dame deal is still going through, and it seems by all accounts that it will end up being the Miami Heat. I'd love to somehow get involved there. And there have been rumors in the offseason that maybe they would be interested in a guy like Landry Shamet, the Heat being interested in a guy like that. And I feel like that would be a good fit. I feel like it would make more sense him playing over there than he would be here. If we really are trying to develop our young guards and young small forwards, it really makes zero sense to have a guy like him taking any minutes away from a guy like Bilal Coulibaly, Johnny Davis, any of those guys. Corey Kispert, for what reason do you need to have this guy on your roster currently? I just don't see the minutes there for him. He's coming off an injury himself. And he's probably going to want to get a lot of playing time and be able to showcase himself for a new contract after this season. I don't see the playing time here in Washington. So to me, I'd love to see him dealt before the season even starts. It just feels like for both parties, it makes more sense for him to be elsewhere.
Yeah, I think I wasn't even thinking about Shamet, but I think that's an interesting point. I almost wonder if the Wizards could serve as a third team and maybe they would absorb a center with a bad contract or something in one of these bigger deals. Like, for example, if I was Portland, I would, any Dame deal I would do, Yusuf Nurkic would have to go to. So whatever deal I'm doing, I would want to get off that contract. Now, I think he has 3 years left at quite a bit of money left per year. And I'm not saying that as a Wizards fan, I'd be dying to take Yusuf Nurkic's 3 year deal on the books. So obviously they'd have to be incentivized to take on the contract, but that's kind of what I assume the front office has plans to do here on some level, is to take on kind of the OKC method, which was take on some bad contracts with picks attached to them and then potentially maybe rehabilitate. Like, for example, Nurkic could easily be the backup center to playing 20, 25 minutes a night or whatever. And maybe there's a way down the road where you could flip him or not, or he could just sit on your books. And, you know, Wizards are going to have a ton of cap space. They're not going to be a player in free agency in terms of getting max stars or whatever. So maybe that's a way where they could get a veteran center in there to fill minutes. They could get, I mean, you probably would at least want two picks to take on Nurkic's deal. So that maybe that type of thing. And then Landry Shamet goes out in that type of deal. So you're kind of reconfiguring the roster where you're adding that veteran big, somebody, because at the end of the day, you need somebody for Kuzma and Poole and even the young guys. You need a big that knows how to play. And you said Nurkic isn't perfect. He's very flawed in a lot of ways, and his best days are probably behind him, but he can still play. And so he's not going to be a complete, you know, dud out there. He could at least play. He's capable of running, you know, kind of being a hub on offense, and he can do a bunch of different things. So my point is not to make this about Jusuf Nurkić specifically, but I just wonder if that's a way where Shamet can get off onto a different team that might make more sense for him in a team like Miami, and the Wizards can kind of fill that role that they need filled on the team, which is just having another big body in there to back up Gafford that can also start if Gafford gets hurt, and the team can still be competent. Because I think sometimes we forget that the team's not just, not me and you forget, but people forget that the team's not just trying to be terrible. Like, they want to put a competent product out there on the floor, and you can't just have Muscala or Anthony Gill or Xavier Cooks being your backup center. You actually want someone in there that can play real minutes, and if Gafford gets hurt or is in foul trouble, you don't want to have to literally put Mike Muscala out there. I wouldn't think they would want that. So I wonder if that's a way for them to fill like that type of trade, even if it's not Nurkic specifically, where they could send out Shamet, free up some of those minutes on the wing, or not have to worry about playing a guy like Shamet, and then you could fill a role that you need filled potentially.
Yeah, I really do actually like that fit. And that trade idea, I really think that would make a lot of sense for us as well. The thought of Xavier Cooks or Anthony Gill being small ball backup five is terrifying me right now. Just putting that into existence is scary. Just a terrible thought. But it very well, I mean, it happened a little bit last year as far as Anthony Gill. We did see that. I don't ever want to see that again. So give me some serious center options. Yeah, I think the trade market would be the best case. There's not really too many great center options available out there currently. I would have loved to bring back Jay Huff on that third two-way deal. Unfortunately, he's now, I believe, in Denver. So I would have liked a guy like that to fill that third center position. But I feel like the trade market's going to be probably the best course of action.
It'd be nice if they used the two-way spot on a young big like a Usman Garuba from formerly of the Rockets. And I know he got cut by OKC. He didn't get picked up, did he? I know Ty Washington got picked up, but did Garuba get picked up? I didn't see anything about him.
I haven't seen that. I did see Ty, but no, I believe he is still out there. Be worth a young guy on a two-way deal. I don't know. I feel like he's kind of like the guy we got out of Detroit and with the OKC. I feel like they're kind of similar type of players, but I feel like he's the younger version. So
I think Garuba has more, let's just say, real NBA talent than Eugene Amari. I don't want to talk down to him, because I actually think that he's the type of culture guy that like every team could use, someone that's just going to play hard. And the Wizards have, for a team that has lacked guys like that for like the larger part of my life. it's just
right.
Like you might have really talented players, but I wouldn't always say they played hard. So he's definitely not the most talented, but he plays hard. And so I think Garuba is, I'm not, you know, an expert on Usman Garuba. I'm not going to act like I am, but from what I have seen, he seems to actually have more actual NBA talent, where I could actually see him if things broke right, being a part of a, you know, real NBA rotation. And I just can't see that for Amari. So I think that Garuba would be a perfect two-way guy and would be exactly the type of player that I would want them to kind of take a flyer on and see what he could do. And I kind of felt the same way about Ty too. I was hoping that they would bring him in potentially on a two-way, or even just give him a roster spot. Like, I'd much rather see either one of those guys on the roster than Anthony Gill or Xavier Cooks. I mean, not to continually bash those two guys, but I just feel like those guys at least have some upside. And for a team that isn't really competing for anything, having these 20, late 20 year olds that have no upside at all. Xavier Cook maybe has a little bit of upside, maybe as he gets his feet more under him in the NBA, but Anthony Gill is who he is at this point, which is a 12th man. And you just would feel like you want to see these guys that actually have shown flashes of having talent, are younger and could develop and be in our system and that type of thing. So Garuba would be a perfect fit, and I would be really happy if they used their third two-way spot on him, or even just outright gave him a roster spot or let him compete for one in camp. But I digress. I haven't heard any rumblings about the Wizards connection with Garuba in any capacity, so maybe that's not going to happen, but you never know. But I definitely do think that there just has to be some other move at center. I just can't imagine it actually going into the season with the center spot the way it is. But I do think there's more dominoes here that are going to drop in terms of trades and different things like that, potentially later in the offseason, that might shake something loose for the Wizards. And maybe they're just kind of picking their spots. I guess there's no rush at this point in the offseason because there's like a deal here and a deal there. I saw PJ Washington got signed. JaVale McGee got signed today. But besides that, it feels like there's really just no moves going on at all at this time of year. So, but we mentioned Xavier Cooks. He's actually been playing really well in FIBA play. He almost looks like a different player playing overseas. And I feel like we're seeing that a lot. Like Rondae Hollis-Jefferson looks like Kobe Bryant out there in FIBA playing. I mean, I swear I saw a clip of Hollis-Jefferson. I honestly thought it was Kobe Bryant for like a half second. I was like, what is going on? And it was just Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, and good for him. He looks amazing playing in FIBA. But and Xavier Cooks, like I started this with saying, is he's looked very good. It just seems like the FIBA game is just so different in some way. I can't even explain it, but where sometimes you see these players who cannot play in the NBA that they actually look like really good players. Like Evan Fournier looks good in FIBA, but he can't even get in the rotation now in the NBA. What are your thoughts on Cooks' play in FIBA? And do you think there's any chance that it translates to the Wizards?
I wouldn't predict that it will translate because, like you mentioned, it is a completely different game. I will go quickly to Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. I do think he would translate to the NBA.
Me too.
I would take, going back to an offseason move we would make, I would love to bring him in as well.
I'm on the same page. Although, I was thinking that.
Although I don't think he's going to be Kobe or anything in the league like he's looking over there in FIBA, but I do think he is a solid NBA player. And I think he did show that in his short stint here, that he can provide NBA type skills. But back to the thing that matters here, Xavier Cooks. He's looked good, obviously, definitely more built for the overseas game. I feel like in the NBA, he's a really small ball five. He is a screen setter. He's a grinder. He's going to get the offensive boards. But defensively, he's always at a mismatch no matter who he's guarding. He's not really going to be a rim protector. He's not really going to just stop anybody from coming into the lane defensively. So it's kind of just who he is at this point, I think. He's an athlete for sure, but he can't shoot outside of, 10 feet? So he's a very small ball rim-running five, and I just don't think that's really has a place in the NBA. We see guys like Montrezl Harrell, who probably fits that description, can't shoot beyond 15. Can't defend, but is a rim running smaller big that really grinds at a, I would say at a higher level than Xavier Cooks does, but is a small ball grinding five, and he's had trouble finding his footing in the league. So maybe there's a role there for him. I've keep mentioning it in pods repeatedly that I think his roster spot is used better elsewhere, but he has looked pretty good. So, I mean, I hope it does translate. Like I'm willing to see it out in a training camp, let him battle it out. Would I guarantee that his spot is there beyond training camp? No, I wouldn't.
I agree with you. I think the shooting is really what holds him back in the NBA setting. And you mentioned that he couldn't shoot outside 10 feet. So to that point, I think that's really what the holdback is for him having a real role is the fact that he can't consistently knock down a jump shot or like a corner three or anything like that really limits his positional versatility. It literally limits him to playing the five on offense because if you put him next to, let's say he's next to Gafford, there's just no floor spacing on offense at all. So while that might be okay defensively, and it probably wouldn't even be okay defensively, but let's just say it was, there's just no way that the other guys on offense would have any space to operate with Gafford and Xavier Cooks on the floor because no one's going to respect either of their shots. So if I was him, my number one thing I would have been working on this offseason would be corner threes. Like, can I become a 35% corner three-point shooter so that I can space the floor and play the four in some capacity? But I don't see that in the cards for him. So I just think that at best, he's like a 12th man, 11th or 12th man, a guy that can play spot minutes. He's not going to hurt you or kill you out there, but he's just not going to be that additive in the NBA game. I think that those skills just don't translate the same. I think some players can make that those FIBA skills or those overseas skills translate a little bit more. But with Xavier Cooks, I was watching some of the FIBA highlights, and while he looks impressive, it's a lot of hustle and like rim running type things. I don't always think are just not going to translate to the NBA the same way. I do think that he's a guy that, like you kind of said, was a grinder and that'll work hard and all that stuff. Now stuff's going to translate, but I just think when you're really putting together an NBA roster, he would be an easy cut for me on the NBA level. So I think that's just where you land. And I hate to constantly kind of speak down on the guy because I think that, you know, being an MVP of any league around the world isn't easy. So I don't want to kind of poo-poo that, but at the same time, it kind of is what it is. I mean, you see a lot of talented guys that just don't make it in the NBA and they have great careers overseas. And I wanted to touch on the Ronnie Hollis Jefferson thing. Watching him play in FIBA and watching the highlights, you can see how much better he's gotten on offense. Just his comfort level shooting the ball, attacking, and that would never be his role in the NBA. So, but what it spoke to me as is that's a guy that is going to do what's necessary with whatever team he's on. So for the team he's on, which is, I believe, the country of Jordan, that's what they need him to do. So he's doing that. But if you remember Rondae Hollis-Jefferson, when he was in the league, he was playing a lot of small ball, like four and five, where he was a power forward or an interchangeable lineup, just like a defensive presence that could switch out in the wing and that type of thing. And if his offense is developed even a little bit, and I don't think he's going to be a great three-point shooter by any stretch of the imagination, but he's the type of guy that I would love to for the Wizards to sign just because of, I feel like, the mentality he's going to have. I was watching an interview with him after he had a good game in FIBA, and he was talking about, you know, I was a guy that was invited to the green room. I was top whatever in my class, like one of the top recruits. Like, I kind of had everything laid out for me, and then when I didn't make an NBA roster and I was out the league, I doubted myself. And I kind of went through this period where I didn't know kind of how things were going to go for me. And he talked about how his son motivated him to keep going and to push through. And why I'm bringing that up is because I feel like that adversity is something that pushing through adversity is something that this Wizards team is going to need, is someone with that type of mentality, because there's going to be a lot of adversity this season. There's going to be a lot of losses. There's going to be losing streaks. The team isn't that talented. So to me, to have a guy like that be one of the veterans on the team, you know, to show Bilal Coulibaly, hey, like, this is how we do it. This is how we keep pushing, like, whatever. Those are the kind of guys that I want, but he can actually do that and play. So it's the kind of the combination of both where I'm sure Anthony Gill's encouraging the guys, but I don't see his role. I could see Rondae Hollis-Jefferson coming in for 15 to 20 minutes a night and giving real good, solid minutes. He's going to play hard. He's not going to do what he's doing in FIBA, but he's just the type of guy that if I saw, hey, Wizards sign, you know, him to a 1-year deal, I would, you know, be like, hey, like, that's the kind of guy that I can see he's going to do whatever role you give him, whether it's just a cheerleader on the bench or whether it's actually playing, he's actually going to give it his all. And he's actually someone that can play. So kind of to that point, I would like to see that too.
Yeah. I feel like if I'm a team like the Phoenix Suns, I'm sprinting to my phone for a guy like Rondae Hollis-Jefferson to try to fill out my roster. Like, I feel like he's the perfect type of player that fits right in with a contender. And honestly, I mean, as you mentioned, I feel like he would make sense with a team like us as well. I just think that's a player that you can fit and mold into just about any situation. As we're seeing here in FIBA play, the dude does look, I saw the same clip you did, and I saw it mirrored to make it look like he was right-handed. He looked like Kobe in that clip. Like, it was insane. Yeah, I'm not going to call him Kobe or anything, but he looks definitely much improved offensively. I believe he's only 27, 28 years old, so it's not like he's an old man, 30 years old, 32 years old, that is wasting a roster spot. I think he's young enough to where he still makes sense for what your direction is. And we mentioned earlier in the podcast that they don't necessarily want to bottom out. So they want good players in the building. I think Rondae Hollis-Jefferson is a good NBA player currently. And I think he was previously a great defender in the league. So if he developed at all offensively, he's an even better player than he ever was. So I'd love to take a shot for sure. That's a guy I would love to have in the building.
Chase, let's switch gears here a little bit. Let's talk about Coach Wes Unseld Jr. He's going into his third year. Overall, his record over the past two seasons, his first two seasons with the Wizards, I should say, a record of 70 and 94. He went 35 and 47 in both seasons. Let's just start with, what are your overall feelings on Coach Unseld going into his third season with the Wizards?
I think he's in a prove it year. Absolutely. I think he needs to, and not necessarily win games this year, but I think he needs to prove that he's an NBA caliber coach, because I do feel like in his first two seasons as a Wizards head coach, I would argue that he has not shown that ability to be an NBA level head coach. I think he's shown the ability, obviously, to be a high level NBA assistant, but being a head coach in the NBA, completely different ball game, completely different level of coaching that you need to achieve at as a head coach. And is he the worst coach in the league? I don't think so. I think I saw an article written. I unfortunately don't remember who wrote it, but they highlighted the offense that Wes Unseld Jr. has been running, and there's actually some pretty solid concepts that he runs. And is he the best X's and O's coach? No, I don't think he's great in that aspect, but I don't think he's awful. Where he has tended to struggle is with his rotations, with timeout management. Seems like every time you have a big lead, it's not safe. And oftentimes I would attribute that to Wes Unseld Jr. and his inability to call timeouts at the right time and his inability to set up offense at the right time and to get his team playing at a pace that makes sense for having a big lead. Seems like that's where he struggles as a coach. And some of that, I'm sure, is also who they have had beside him. I would have loved to have seen a more
high caliber assistant coach near him in the last couple of years. And it seems like they've actually decided to bring in a couple pretty solid assistant coaches this offseason. So that should hopefully help him. But what I want to see from him this season is develop the young talent, make sure that they get the minutes that they need to develop. I don't care if they win this season. I want to see the young guys move forward. And hopefully they do win as well, but I'm not basing my judgment of Wes Unseld Jr. this season on that. I'm basing it on how did you make the correct changes mid-game? Did you have good game plans heading into games? Did you play the right guys down the stretch? That's what I'm looking for from him this season, not necessarily the win total. If he has shown that he has developed the young players the way that I want him to, if he has played the correct rotations down the stretch that I feel like should be on the floor, then I will absolutely give him a solid grade despite what I feel like the record will be this season.
Yeah, you said that very, very beautifully, Chase. I agree with exactly what you said. I honestly think while I've been disappointed with Coach Unseld's performance so far, and it really doesn't have anything to do with the record, because I think that the Wizards have been about 35 win talent team. So I think that he's coaching the team record wise to about what I think they should be. I think it was possible for last season's team, if they maxed out, they could have been maybe a 44 win team. But I think maxed out means health being maxed out, coaching being maxed out, everyone playing to their potential being maxed out. I think at best they could have won 44 games. So I think that things don't ever work out like that for the Wizards. So I don't think that's realistic. So it kind of went about how I realistically expected it to go. So if it went about how you expect it to go, how, you know, I kind of think in my head, well, how can you feel disappointment towards his performance? And also I want to speak on, I don't think that Tommy Shepard gave him a roster to, if he's a defensive coach, I feel like you need to give him defenders to work with. And if DeLon Wright is your best defender, I just don't know what you're supposed to do with that on a level as a defensive coach. But at the same time, if you're a defensive coach, you're supposed to be coaching up some of the guys that aren't good defenders to be better than, you know, you kind of want the team to be better than the sum of its parts, or whatever that expression is, you know what I mean? Or better than the sum of their parts, or whatever that expression may be. So I find when I watch the games, I question a lot of Coach Unseld's decisions. And I think that's kind of the tell of whether the coach is doing a good job or not, is when you at home as someone that isn't a coach, that doesn't know all the intricacies of every single play and all that. Obviously I'm knowledgeable enough about basketball to understand, you know, certain sets that are being run and things like that on both sides of the ball. But I think when you think to yourself, why is he starting Anthony Gill at the three? Anthony Gill is a four or a five at best. There's no way he's a three. Like how are we even starting this guy at the three? Or why didn't he call a timeout there? Or why isn't he playing this player, but he's playing that player? Or, hey, you know, Jordan Goodwin had like five good games in a row and now he's not even playing. Like, what's going on? I think it's those decisions that bother me the most about Coach Unseld. It's these decisions where I'm watching the same game he's coaching, and I don't know how he can't see some of these like obvious things that don't make sense or that need to be changed or things like that. So I think that is where, to the point you were making, Chase, about, you know, it's more about the plan than it is me expecting the players to go out there and win games. Like, is the planning good? Is the game plan good? Are the rotations right? Or is he using the timeouts right? Like exactly kind of how you mentioned it. That's what I'm going to be looking at. But like I mentioned, I've been disappointed with him overall over the past two seasons, because I feel like he was sold as this defensive coach and I haven't seen enough on that side of the ball to make me feel like there's some promise there to come in year three. I think that his offense, I think he did a pretty okay job with the offense. I mean, Porzingis had a really good year. Kuzma had perhaps his best year. Beal had an efficient year. And I don't think there was a ton of other talent on the team offensively. So I think that he did a pretty okay job with the team. Maybe you could even argue a, you know, decent to good job, but with the offense, I mean, but I just find overall, he just seems subpar to me, like a very, at best, I would say he's average. At worst, I say he's slightly below average. He's not terrible. He's not horrible. I'm not calling for his job, but I do think, for example, Scott Brooks was a better coach than him. I thought Scott Brooks, at least he had his own flaws and warts, like playing 3 point guards at the same time or two centers at the same time. Or
you didn't like the Neto small forward minutes?
Right, exactly. Like things like that, that didn't make that much sense. But he would get a really high scoring offense out of like Jerome Robinson, Isaac Bonga, and Ish Smith and Beal, you know, running the, like, and to me, there was no way that team should be scoring a ton of points. I mean, you look at those guys, Ish Smith's a backup at best, and then the other two aren't even in the league, and they were actually getting real minutes that year. But I digress. My point is, as Coach Unseld to me has just been pretty underwhelming. And honestly, before he got hired, I was really wondering why the fan base was clamoring for him so much. I know that there's the tie to obviously the family connection with his father and that type of thing, but based on his background, and I don't mean this to, again, to talk down on his background, but I just didn't know what, not saying it was a hire I was against, but I just didn't know why people were so for it. I think I was more just like, yeah, like I'm willing to give him a chance, but I kind of wondered about how his voice would resonate in a veteran locker room. And I almost wondered, is he a better coach that you hire to develop with a young team? So you're also, the coach is kind of developing while the team is also going through growing pains versus a coach that, hey, we have Beal here in place. We have these other guys. We're trying to win real games. And I kind of thought to myself, why is this the guy you're going after for that scenario? And I think he's just done an okay job so far. But I think this year is a year where he's going to have to prove that his execution in terms of the game plan and timeout usage, rotations, all that type of stuff. I think he's going to have to prove that he's more kind of in tune with what the team needs and that his voice is resonating in the locker room.
Absolutely. And I think we look back into the last couple seasons, we saw a 35-point blown lead to the Clippers 2 years ago. I don't care what happened in that game. You're going to give obviously the players a fair bit of blame for that situation, but any game that is coached well, you will not blow a 35-point. Like, it's a clear indication of poor coaching if you blow a 35-point lead in an NBA game in just about one half. That's insane. And there were multiple 20-point blown leads in a row. And I think all of them could be attributed to Wes Unseld Jr. I mentioned before, previously in a different pod, that there was one game in particular against Minnesota that I gave him credit for as far as a really solid coached game that I thought he put on his shoulders and won for the team. Other than that, I did not remember a single game where I was like, that was just a well-coached win. Like, Wes Unseld Jr. schemed up that win. And that's what I'm hoping to see moving forward. Like, we see solid coaches around the league, I feel like, scheme up wins for their team. Guys like Eric Spoelstra. Do I think Wes Unseld Jr. is at that level? I do not. Would I love to see him improve and hopefully develop as a coach as well, getting better with that timeout management, getting better with his rotations? I hope we do see that. I hope we get at least a slightly above average coach in Wes Unseld Jr. moving forward, because I do agree. I think he's been slightly below average.
I think that, you know, he's going to be, I wouldn't say on the hot seat, but with Brian Keefe and Vanderpool coming in, I mean, to be his assistants, if I was him, I would feel a little bit of pressure to really have to, you know, make sure I'm doing things the way they need to be done. I don't think that those guys were brought in to replace him, but I do think that if I was him, there'd be a little bit of a fire lit under me going into my third year. I believe his contract was a 4-year deal that he initially signed. So plenty of lame duck coaches get fired in that last year before it happens. I feel like Ted Leonsis is, he doesn't like to pay multiple coaches at once. Some franchises don't care about that as much. You know, I guess it's like, you know, I think if it was like Mark Cuban or something, he'll just pay what he has to pay to get the right coach in there. But Ted Leonsis is a really patient and that type of thing. And I know Wes Unseld was someone that Woj reported that when the front office got overturned, Shepard lost his job. He reported that, you know, Leonsis was kind of all for Wes Unseld and there were no plans to make changes there. So I do imagine, though, that Winger and Dawkins are going to have a close eye on that situation and see how things go. My expectation going forward is that I think they're going to give him a long rope this season to assess how he does. And by long rope, I mean, I think they'd have to start really bad, like really bad, for him to lose his job early on. But I think that if he starts, even if they, you know, lose the first few games and they start, you know, with a bad record, let's say, I still think they would kind of ride things out at least until halfway through the season before they would even consider making a move. And I still, even then, I just, my gut is telling me that with Leonsis kind of being the way he is, that he, again, there really would have to be like a big losing streak where they lose, you know, 10 plus games or something, that where I would see them letting him go midseason. But I do think if he has a, where they, if they just have some really bad losses or huge losing streaks, I definitely don't think he'll be back for a fourth year. What are your thoughts on that? What are your expectations for Wes Unseld's role with the team going forward after this year, maybe?
I think it's extremely clear Ted wants this to work out. He brought him in. I feel like a big part of that was obviously his father's connection. He wants Wes Unseld Jr. to be the guy to bring the franchise back, following in the footsteps of his father, who was at one time an NBA champion with the franchise, was Rookie of the Year MVP. Like, I think he wants Wes Unseld Jr. to be that guy. And I think it's been clear, at least thus far, that he may not be. I wouldn't say I expect him to get another year after this year, because I don't see success as far as win and loss. I don't know if that's what's gonna, I'm personally judging him off of other things other than win and loss, but I don't know what the front office is looking for. If there's a certain metric that they're hoping for Wes Unseld Jr. to reach, I do think this roster is going to be tough to work with as far as win loss. So, while I'm judging him based solely off of his development, we'll see what the franchise thinks.
Yeah.
I definitely think there will be better options coaching wise moving forward, but I hope I'm wrong. I'd love to see him be a coach that wins games for the team, and this team could, you know, surprises us. I'd love to see that.
Yeah, it's kind of unfortunate, because I feel like I would rather see them go with a coach that has, especially if we're going to be entering a rebuild or slash we're already in one. But if you know, for example, I'd be surprised if the Wizards weren't picking in the top five next year. And if we're picking in the top five next year, probably going to be picking in the top five the year after that, too. So say that's our future for the next couple of years. I'd rather have someone that I've seen develop young talent into, like, Kenny Atkinson, for example. I've seen him develop a young Brooklyn team that didn't have a bunch of top picks, minus, I guess, D'Angelo Russell, who was a top pick that got traded there. But you know what I mean? They didn't have a bunch of high picks that were, you know, obvious blue chip prospects that, you know, he turned into a playoff team. I mean, he had a bunch of some cast offs, some guys who didn't work other places, some, you know, some draft picks that were later, you know, later picks, and he turned that team to a low level playoff team. They weren't a great playoff team, but he built a culture that kind of quickly got derailed, I guess, once KD and Kyrie got there. But he laid a good foundation for that team that if they had kept going that direction, you could have seen incremental improvement from that foundation they built. And it was in large part due to that tutelage that those young guys got. And he's the type of guy that, especially for where the team is at now, that if Coach Unseld doesn't work out, he would be at the top of my list of coaches who I would want to see kind of come in and say, all right, like, this is a young group that I can mold. And he just, I've just seen that result before. And that doesn't mean it's going to be exactly the same, but I just don't know what, there's not much to go off of with Coach Unseld where for me to have faith, and nothing that he's done so far has made me feel any more sure about him as a coach. I really just feel like it's such a mixed bag. Like I started off this segment saying that I could see how he wasn't really set up to be successful in certain ways. But at the same time, it's kind of the preparation and in-game coaching tactics and things like that that have been disappointing to me more so than like the win losses and that type of thing. So I think it's a bit of a mixed bag with him, but I think that this is a big year for him, and he'll definitely have to show that he's worth keeping around. I mean, I hate to say it like that, but it's kind of the truth.
Yep. No, I completely agree. I think it's do or die for him this year, as far as showing that you're an NBA caliber head coach. Because there's a difference between being a solid assistant. I think he'll always have a role being a really solid assistant in the NBA. He's clearly a good coach as far as certain things on an NBA floor, but being a head coach, completely different ball game. And he's got a lot of work to do in that aspect. So hopefully he makes that step this year. I'd love to see him be the coach that we need him to be. Let's hope it happens.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's close the pod out with touching on a guy that's, I guess, near and dear to the hearts of most Wizards fans, I should say, with John Wall, who's currently a free agent now after a short 34 game stint last year with the Clippers. I'll start by giving my two cents on this. I'm kind of sad about like how John Wall's career has landed him at this point. He's posting, I've seen a lot of like little clips of him doing runs and stuff like that in Miami. And it's almost sad to see the clips because I know that there's still an NBA player in there, but I honestly don't know if I think he's going to get another chance. And if he does get another chance, I think it's going to be like a mid season, like some team has an injury and they kind of just need that veteran point guard presence. But that's kind of just a sad space for John Wall to be in at this point. Someone that's so decorated and tenured in the NBA, who obviously saw his career derailed by injury and maybe some of his own choices, some of his own choices contributed to that derailment of his career. But obviously a lot of it had to do with injury. If you look at him now, he doesn't have the same lift at all or burst, which naturally comes with age, but also with the constant surgeries and different things he's had, obviously with the Achilles tear and the knee issues. It just slowly, constantly chips away at the athleticism that a player would have, mixed with also him being over 30 now. So it's just kind of sad. But in terms of his role in the NBA going forward, I've been thinking a lot about, well, he clearly still has NBA talent, right? So it's not that he can't play. But what would hold teams back, like a team that is competing, from bringing him in just to be a spot minute guy? Like you kind of see with Derrick Rose in the Knicks, right? Derrick Rose on the team, he doesn't really play that much, but when he does, he's not going to kill you out there. He can give you some good point guard minutes. He's a good mentor to the young guys, that kind of thing. Why can't John Wall be that guy? I just feel like everywhere with John Wall, you kind of hear these rumblings, whether they're true or not, that like he feels like he should play more, or there should be more minutes for him or that type of thing. And the Clippers thing was so abrupt. I feel like everything was fine in terms of the locker room and that dynamic and how much he played. And I know he was sitting out games and he was playing and obviously only played 34 games. So he wasn't playing that often, but it seemed like things were fine. And then out of nowhere, there was a report that like the Clippers are either going to trade him or cut him. And you're kind of like, well, how did it get to that point where there it was? It just seemed like they were just done with him being on the roster. And I know he didn't play that well, but you wonder, there has to be more to it than just not playing well when a team like the Clippers, who when he has relationships with a lot of the players, was tight with Paul George, they're just going to move on from him. So to me, there has to be something more there that's making teams that clearly, you know, there's a lot of these teams like Phoenix, they don't even have a point guard on the roster. They traded away Campaign. They traded away Chris Paul. They couldn't use John Wall for 10 minutes a night just to run the backup unit, to have someone that can pass the ball and make plays and that type of thing. I'm not saying that they should sign him, but I just do wonder what is holding these teams back from bringing in a guy like John Wall. And I know his I mean, at this point, he's not an all-star anymore or anything on that level at this point, but there aren't that many guys that can come in and push the pace. Like he still can push the pace, get up and down the floor, and he can make passes and make other players better. Still, he still has that quality about him. Do you have an opinion on this? And what do you think of John Wall's future going forward in the NBA?
Yeah, I think it's similar situation to what we saw with Carmelo Anthony a few years ago. It took him a little bit of time, especially understanding himself, understanding where he was as a player at that point of his career. I feel like John Wall's in a similar state where they just are not able to accept that maybe you're not the guy anymore at this age. So John Wall was drafted number one overall. He had the whole entire city behind him for years. He was always the Batman to Beal's Robin for years. And it's tough to make that adjustment in a span of a couple years where you're entering a training camp with the Wizards thinking that you guys are running it back. And then the next year you're traded to a place where the star James Harden doesn't want you. There's nothing around you in Houston, just a terrible situation. He's been injured for the last 3 years. You move to LA. You think that you're potentially the point guard of, that they're looking for to fill the void, and they have him coming off the bench. So obviously he needs to come to terms with the player that he needs to be on an NBA roster moving forward. You're going to have to be an NBA backup. And is that out there for a team? Like, is there an incentive to have a guy like this as your backup point guard, as opposed to maybe a young guy that you could potentially develop down? Like, I feel like for our situation in particular, like, we all love John Wall. I love John Wall and I will always love John Wall, but he wouldn't make sense for a team like us, not just the Wizards, but even I feel like a situation like us, a young team, I don't think he would make sense with them. And you look at it, the contenders, and I'm failing to see too many area, too many rosters where he fits in well either. So it's just kind of that point of his career where he needs to find the exact right situation that he can be a role player, and he needs to accept that he can be a role player. Like, Carmelo was able to establish a couple good years in Portland as a role player where he didn't have to be one of the main guys. He had a little bit of trouble accepting that in OKC, and it took him a little bit of time to find a new home. I feel like John Wall's potentially in that same area, although his game was really predicated on his speed and his athleticism. And I do think he's taken a big hit in those areas due to age and many injuries over the span of his career. So whether he is an NBA player or not at this point, I truly don't know. I feel like last season, I think it could have been argued he didn't look like one last season, which is really tough to see for a guy that we all love so much. But I think he needs to make some changes in order to stick around. I mean, the way the game has kind of moved in the last few years, like I remember we had Andre Miller, who was like 40 years old, playing for us. And at that time, maybe that made sense for an older point guard. You can run your second unit. But I feel like nowadays, most teams want to push. They want to get out and transition. They want to move. And John Wall, at this point of his career, seems to have moved to slowing the ball down, whereas early in his career it was push, 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 go. So does he make sense in the league anymore? Unfortunately, I would say I don't think so anymore. And I hope he's able to prove me wrong and able to find a spot on the roster, because I want that for him. But I don't know if that exists anymore.
I think the Melo comparison is actually, that's actually what I was thinking about earlier today when we were kind of even discussing topics to talk about. That ran through my head that I think it's very similar to the Melo situation. Even back then, I remember when he was out the league, I have friends that are like really big Melo fans. And I remember they're like, oh, there's no way he should be out the league and this and that. And I said, well, actually, I get it, because he's in this weird no man's land where, can Melo still average if you gave him 30 minutes a night? Could he still average 16 points? Probably. But it would probably be an inefficient, ball dominant, jab step, jump shot, 16 points, and then he wouldn't play defense. So then really, what are you getting out of it when you kind of have those two things? And I think Melo proved that he could still play on some level, but I think he was okay for the Blazers. I don't think it was anything, you know, anything crazy that really helped them in some substantial way. And then he obviously had a okay stretch on the Lakers, and then his career kind of fizzled from there, and he retired, obviously. And I think John Wall is in a similar boat, that I do wonder if his play style, the way he's used to playing, which is no off-ball movement, he has to have the ball, and he can't shoot. And now that he can't get downhill and attack the rim and blow by people, he kind of has to settle for that jump shot a lot of times in spots where he used to be able to get past you and get to the rim. And even when you watch the little clips he puts online now, there's a lot of jump shots and shooting in it. And of course, in the clips, he's making them, but I'm sure there's just as many clips of him missing them and things like that too. And I do think that, you know, if you're some of these teams, you're like, okay, well, if his athleticism has dwindled, but he still can't shoot, which we saw in the Clippers, he didn't shoot the ball well. On Houston the year before that, he didn't shoot the ball well. Despite him, I know he works on it, so I don't think it's from a lack of trying to improve it. I just think some guys aren't wired to shoot well. I don't think it's they're not trying to improve. I think that some guys just, it comes more naturally, and other guys, they can work at it and work at it, and it doesn't improve to the level that makes them a good NBA shooter. I mean, I just think that's just the way it's going to go. And I think that John Wall's just one of these guys who his blessing in life, his gift from God, was his speed and his ability to, like, he was faster than everybody, but he wasn't blessed with the skill of having this supreme touch. I mean, that just wasn't his skill. And he hasn't developed it the way that I think to give him the longevity in the league that maybe, you know, that we'd all like to see and that I know he desires. One thing I think that is important to mention in regards to John Wall is, if you look at over the past just four seasons, since the 2017-18 season, his last two seasons in Washington, he played 41 games in 32 games, and then he missed two whole seasons in there. The 2021 season, he played 2020-2021, and for Houston played 40 games, and then for the Clippers, then he missed a whole nother season, and then he played 34 games for the Clippers last year. I mean, we're talking about three missed seasons in the past 7 years, it looks like, 6 or 7 years, and when he does play, he plays less than 41 games, less than half, you know, basically less than half the games every year. I feel like when I watched him play on the Clippers last year, and I watched a lot of the games, with the first few games, he looked pretty good. Like, he looked like an NBA player. He was pushing the pace. I remember they were excited to have him because you could see him out there. He was running up and down with, like, Luke Kennard and the shooters they had. The floor was space. He had a good chemistry with Zubats. And you could see these, like, glimpses of the old John Wall. It wasn't the same, but you could see these little glimpses. But as the season wore on, he missed more games because of injury. So constant, he played this game, then he sit out a game. He played this game, and he sits out another game. And they had him on this plan, this load management. And then I feel like for someone that hasn't played three whole seasons in the past few years, and then when he does play, he barely plays, there's no way to ever develop any type of rhythm to play game in and game out at any type of consistent level. So part of the problem with John Wall, and he's probably never going to be able to get this back because he probably is just not going to find the role, but you hear NBA players talk about all the time about how hard it is to play in like spurts, and then stop and then play a game and then not play. And it's like, you can never develop. And that's kind of been the story of the Clippers in general with Paul George and Kawhi, that whole era. It's like, someone they play, they don't. They play, they don't. And they can never develop the chemistry they need. So I think for Wall, a lot of it is he can't develop the consistency he needs on the court with the constant stopping and starting and stopping and starting and stopping and starting. He can't get in the condition he needs to get into. He can't get in any type of rhythm to play at a consistent level. So, and he's just older now, so he's not going to play hard on defense all the time, and or, you know, for him, probably ever. And he's not going to move off the ball. So you're just getting these, you know, you're getting glimpses of the old John Wall here and there, but you're getting all the bad habits, and it's never going to be consistent because he doesn't play enough. So he's going to stand there without the ball when someone else is dribbling the ball. He's not going to move off the ball, and he's not going to play defense, and he doesn't have his rhythm on offense enough to be consistent in other ways, like knocking down shots, not being turnover prone. When I watched this clip of him on Twitter, it was like his low lights from the Clippers, and people were kind of roasting him. And to me, a lot of it was just like errant passes that, if he was probably more in the rhythm of NBA speed and things like that, he might not make the pass the same way he made it in a lot of these lowlights. And I thought to myself, it's just sad that he's never going to be healthy enough slash, you know, just have the opportunity to play enough to ever develop a rhythm so where we could actually see what he could potentially do going forward. Because I feel like half of the battle is just being able to get his legs under him enough to play consistently and then show if he can actually still do it or not. But because in the glimpses we do see, it's so up and down, it's like no team's going to give him a shot. Do you get what I mean?
Absolutely. I think you hit it right on the head there. He's just at the point of his career where he would need to fit a role that he may not want to fit.
Right,
and it just doesn't make sense for many franchises at this point, and it's super frustrating not having seen him be able to play more than 41 games since 2017. Like, to your point, yeah, there's zero chance you're able to build a rhythm up playing that little amount of games in what, 6 years? Like, right. That's, imagine what happened in your life in the last 6 years, what's happened in my life in the last 6 years. Like, so much has changed from physical, mental life changes in the last 6 years, and right. I know John Wall has gone through that himself as well. It's just tough to get back to that player that he remembers those days as being the lead dog, and it's tough to accept that you're not that guy anymore in terms of basketball. Like, you could still be that guy off the court. You can still be that leader that you have somewhat shown at an NBA level to be a great leader. But being the lead dog, being a lead point guard, playing a ton of minutes, that's just not you anymore. And you got to come to terms with it. As a John Wall fan, I hope he is able to do that. I hope he's able to take back his pride and understand I need to be more like 40-year-old Andre Miller to stick around here. I need to be a really solid floor general, and I need to help develop young point guards behind me or even in front of me, more likely, and stick around and be that bench for, you know, leader. Like, that's what he needs to be moving forward. I don't think he will. I personally think his NBA career is over, and I hope I'm wrong on that.
Yeah, I always wonder why players like him in you know, kind of like that were in his situation, like Melo was, and some other players that, you know, are out the league that were once all-star level players. I wonder why they don't make more of an effort to do the little things. And I think it's because they've never done them. And what I mean is, like, I remember I was watching a Clippers game and Ty Lue had Wall setting picks and being like the short roller, and then they would pass it to him and he'd make plays out of the short roll. And I thought, that's such an interesting way to use John Wall. I've never seen this guy set a pick until last year on the Clippers. And I thought to myself,
normally would sit on the other side of the court if he's not touching the ball.
Exactly. And I John Wall hears these criticisms, and I would wonder what, like, he doesn't move without the ball. And if I was him, I would be like, you know what? I'm going to spend this whole offseason. Yeah, I'm going to work on shooting and these other things I work on. But I'm going to learn how to set screens. I'm going to learn how to do some of the more intangible things that when, if I get a chance to get a look, they're going to see that I've worked on these other things and that I'm willing to accept something that's different than what I've been doing. And I think that just that humility, just showing that humility through his play would be beneficial to him. And even when he does interviews, I think saying things like last year, I know he said that, you know, oh, well, the third best defender is going to be guarding me, and kind of like referenced him and Kawhi and Paul George being like a big three or something like that. And it's kind of like those comments where it's like, dude, you got to see yourself through the lens that you're at right now. You're not the guy that was 26, you know, that was a five-time All-Star or whatever. You're at a different stage in your career. But I digress. I hope that John Wall proves you wrong. I still think there's a chance that he could be on a roster, but it definitely wouldn't surprise me that if he wasn't. But I definitely wish him the best. I hope that he can get on a contending team. And even if he doesn't play much, just be a nice like veteran off the bench, in case of emergency player. I think you could do a lot worse than John Wall in that type of role. But I do understand why teams might prioritize just a young guy or something else of that nature. But before we get out of here, Chase, is there anything else that you want to discuss?
No, man. I just hope we get some more news here coming up soon. Hopefully something on a third center or a young guy filling in that third two-way spot. I'd love to get involved in a trade involving Shamit. Like, I really hope we don't go into training camp with Shamit, but I hope we have something that we're able to talk about in the next few days or not next few days, but next week or so. Like, I want to get back and talking to the Wizards, man. I missed it so much. So yeah. Good to talk to you again, man. I know we want to be more consistent with our potting. It's just been hectic recently for both of us. I just moved and started a new job. I know you're going through a lot of different things yourself. So it was probably a perfect time to not have any Wizards news coming, really. But I hope we do start getting some more coming out here shortly.
Yeah, absolutely. I second all those sentiments. This is the Wizards group chat. Chase, we'll talk to them on the next one, man.